Hey everybody, welcome back to another amazing episode of the best darn show anywhere, not just the internet, the best darn show ever. I will make a claim on the internet and all over. The Oversharon Show. We're joined today again by a returning guest. I'm really excited. We actually just had him on recently and we were discussing some things and some stuff popped up we wanted to talk about. But before we get into that, I have a list of giant quotes, a giant list of quotes here that we're gonna go over, and they're inspired by our topic today. So, without any further ado, here we go. All right. So the first quote is, "Everything you want is on the other side of fear." And that is by Jack Canfield. "Fear is the path to the dark side. Fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering." This is Yoda. I'm sure everybody knows who Yoda is, the Master Jedi.
The
And
Japanese.
the Jap yes, we talked about that last week. I called Sharon racist, and then we found out it was based on Japanese stuff. So I'm like, I guess I'm the one who's racist then. What are you gonna do? All right. We'll get into that. And then the next quote is from Frank Herbert in Dune. "I must not fear. Fear is the mind killer. Fear is the little death that brings total obliteration. I will face my fear. I will permit it to pass over me and through me. And when it has gone past, I will turn the inner eye to see its path. Where the fear is gone, there will be nothing. Only I will remain." I get chills every time I read that, especially on air. All right. And Lao Tzu, speaking of our ongoing series on the Tao, you could check that out. It has its own playlist on YouTube. "There is no illusion greater than fear." We can easily forgive a child who is afraid of the dark. The real tragedy of life is when men are afraid of the light. And that is by Plato. And the last one we have here, "Men are not afraid of things, but of how they view them." Epictetus. Who is the Greek philosopher with a name like that, I'm guessing. And she's gonna pull a card. Go ahead, Sharon.
I am, but do you mind checking the there was another quote that Nick found. Can you tell us about that, Nick? That quote?
Oh, did I miss
Sure. Is it the recent one that I
Yeah.
last one I sent you?
Yeah.
Sure. So there's a quote from a movie called After Earth, and it is the actor Will Smith is speaking to his son in this movie, and the quote reads, "Fear is not real. The only place that fear can exist is in our thoughts of the future. It is a product of our imagination, causing us to fear things that do not at present and may not ever exist. That is near insanity. Do not misunderstand me. Danger is very real, but fear is a choice." Indeed.
I love that.
And where, tell us where that came from.
That is from the movie After Earth. It's a sci-fi movie with Will Smith and his son. It came out a number of years ago.
Oh, I see it. You did send to me, Sharon. I just didn't check it in time.
No worries.
Great quote, though. Kind of feel like
Yeah.
stole a little bit from Dune, but that's all right. What
It's
are you gonna do?
in line with Dune, yeah,
Everybody,
for sure.
I think that when I see things like that, I don't really think it's theft. I think they're just furthering the message for a younger, newer audience, you know.
Yeah.
What are you gonna do? You know, it's like that episode of South Park where they're like, "Simpsons did it." You know, every time they try to come up with a premise, this guy jumped out. He's like, "The Simpsons already did it," and they're like, "The Simpsons did everything. Like, we gotta what are we gonna do?" Like. Yes.
Funny. Well, in the spirit of all these books that we read and these movies that we watch, I'm pulling from the Lord of the Rings deck. And I pulled the Knight of Cups.
Ooh, good card, Sharon.
Knight of Cups. And in this reading, it is Aragorn.
Oh.
And I mean, since our topic is fear, I'm just thinking to myself, who is fearless? pretty fearless.
Yes, in the books anyway.
In the books.
Yeah. I mean, he's pretty fearless in the movies, but in the book, he is really, you know, I mean, it just makes sense because of his lineage and his heritage and where he was, where he grew up. He basically grew up with the elves in the book, you know, L. Ron Hubbard. Yes. I always want to say that with L. Ron, the wise old elf. So I think that it would only make sense that he is the way he is in the books. And it really doesn't make a lot of sense the way he is in the movie, unless you kind of look at culture and how victim narrative is so attractive to people. But it is good that he overcame it, at least in the movie. So,
yeah. So I'm going to read from the little manual thing here. Mm-hmm. All right. It says upright reading is the Knight of Cups seeks emotional fulfillment through expressions of love, humanitarian pursuits, and restoration of harmony in this world, in his world. When he rides into your reading, it's a sign to explore your passions, unleash your creativity, and pursue what makes you feel like a better person. He also symbolizes that you may be making decisions based purely on emotion, so be sure to balance your judgment. In the reversed reading, it says, in a reverse position, this knight is downright moody. At times, he embodies the least attractive qualities of a passionate person: jealousy, possessiveness, and even petulance. This card may suggest you haven't gotten your way and are feeling upset about it, allowing your disappointment to cloud your judgment. Well, I feel like that the talk and discussion about the unleashing your creativity is very synced with some of the things I've been looking at, because I've been listening to some Bashar stuff actually that Nick sent me. But Joe actually was the first guy to tell us about Bashar's content. But Nick kind of brought it up for me because I hadn't seen his stuff in a while. So like I've been seeing some of his stuff, and he just continues to tell people, like, go after your passion. That, like, why would you have that desire if that wasn't what was supposed to guide you to your purpose, you know?
Yeah, 100%. And I really feel like if you just do that and you work at what you want to do, then you could become it. And I'm a good example just because of DJing, because I didn't start DJing until I was 32, I think. And I never tried or practiced or whatever, and I had an opportunity to do it. And then I just jumped into it full force and basically took every gig and opportunity I could to even just go with DJs and help them set up and things like that. So people ask me a lot, like, how do I become a DJ? I'm like, just do it. You know, how'd you become so good? I just did it every day. You know, you're always going to be bad at first. And it's just like comedy with me or whatever it is. This recording, right? I'm sure if you go back and look at the original episodes of Oversharing, they're probably not as polished, or we might not have been as well spoken as we are today. So it's just consistency and just doing it. And if you have something you want to do out there, whoever you are listening to my voice, just do it, man. It's so easy. Just like Nike, just do it.
Yeah. Starting out on the journey of that reminds me of the Three of Pentacles, and then working on it and perfecting it reminds me of the Eight of Pentacles, right, Brandon? Is that?
Yeah, that sounds about right, for sure.
So, any other thoughts before we move on?
I would just say that I totally understand the embodiment of this card, because I'm a Cancer sun sign and I could be very moody, and I have this tendency when things aren't going my way, not anymore. This is something I had to work through. But before, when things weren't going my way, I totally would get into different moods, treat people differently and stuff like that. And now I kind of just try to sit back and observe my own behavior, especially if I get into like a disagreement with somebody or, you know, something comes up. And now that I'm in a relationship, I have a chance to look at myself a lot more, because before I would just spend a lot of time alone. Or with my internet friends. I mean, I have friends in real life too that I hang out with sometimes, but we all get it. Once you get onto a lot of this stuff and you're working on yourself, you really don't want to be around other things except for this stuff, right? Or these rabbit holes that we go on. And so we come through it. So yeah, I totally get that. And I love that card because it's so true. They're just degrees. So many people are like, oh, I'm this way. There's nothing I could do about it. This is me. This is how I am. And it's like, well, maybe you might have that tendency, but it doesn't mean that you're in a life sentence and locked into that, you know?
Exactly. Which reminds me again of MBTI, Myers-Briggs, personality typing system. 100%. Because it, you know, just because these are tendencies of your personality type doesn't mean that that's your excuse. You know, you can learn to balance those things. So, but without further ado, we have Nick, returning guest, and we are going to talk about fear today. It's a topic we discuss a lot on this show, but this particular time, Nick has some insights that he has been getting throughout the last week or two, and they've just been so profound. And he wanted to be able to share that. And we are excited to hear about it.
Awesome.
So welcome.
So, thank you for having me again, as always.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I thought it would be fun to have this conversation because I know that you guys talk about fear often on your show. But fear is just kind of like the controlling force of this realm. And we touched on our last episode, I think it was towards the end, about how sometimes we use words and they don't really fit within like the context of what we're saying. I think that words have a lot of power, and then equally, sometimes words have even more power when they're used, but you don't know what they actually mean. You know, like we can redefine things and we can give words definitions. That make them much more powerful, or changes what they are, right? Changes our understanding of them. So I thought it would be really cool to have this talk and really break down, you know, like a good starting point is what even is fear? Because the word is thrown around all the time. And if you ask somebody, how would you define fear? 99% of the time, they're going to say, well, it's when you're scared of something. And it's like, well, that's just synonymous. That's just a synonym, right? Being fearful or being scared. You're just using a different word, but what actually is fear? So maybe like, I would like to ask you guys that before I even jump into anything. When you guys are presented with that question, what comes to your guys' minds? Like, what is fear?
Well, I can look at it from an apophatic sense because sometimes it helps to describe it as what it is not. And so for me, fear is not trusting God, because there is a master plan for your life. And if you don't trust the plan, you're just going to be living in fear of what is going to happen next.
Yeah, and I would have to say that fear is the mind killer. Fear is the little death. No. just put that in the dictionary. That'd be great. No, I like what you say about that, because I even have to kind of think about how I define the word fear. And I guess for me, you know, because I think it does get mislabeled. I guess I could just say it would be a feeling that I get. Yeah, you're right. When I'm not trusting the plan, right? When I think things are going to go wrong, I have this feeling inside. It's really the only way I could describe it. And then based on that feeling, I can either act or not act or react, you know?
Yeah. So I would say I would kind of take the approach that Sharon took, because I think it would be more constructive. And I would start by saying that fear is not, I would say that fear doesn't exist in the sense that we think it does. Fear is not its own entity. Fear is not an emotion. Fear purely exists within our minds. And, you know, to understand it, you have to break it down, right? So You could, like, what is the difference between fear and danger? That's a good place to start, I think. Because as in that quote, that After Earth quote that I read at the start of this, danger is very real, right? Like the possibility of danger is very real. But there's a difference between taking caution when you know that there is potential danger and actual fear. Like that response that your body and your mind have when you become fearful, I think is ultimately what fear should be described as. Like fear is having a biological response to potential danger, but then choosing to avoid something based on that response. And I would lump fear in the irrational category of that, if that makes sense. You know, like if you see a pack of lions, you're not going to run through them. You're not going to go streaking through them, right? Because that would not be wise. But also, the where fear comes in would be saying, I'm never going to visit Africa because there's lions there. You know, like I'm scared of lions, so I'm just going to completely avoid an entire continent. I think that's more of what I'm talking about when I talk about fear. So it's not an emotion. I think it's a choice to let irrationality override logic. If that makes sense. So I'll stop there and see if you guys
say that one more time. Say that one more time for me.
I would say that fear is letting irrationality overtake logic. So logically, like if you use this in like the context of human, like life, you know, everybody lives in like perpetual fear. It seems like when I go out and I look at people, I'm like, man, everybody's living in fear of everything, right? Most of it is illogical. You have all these strange phobias popping up, right? There's shows about them all the time. You know, like people are scared of white picket fences, and it's like, what in the world? But they're not actually fearful of the object. So like fear to me, ultimately, is, I'll just lay that out and then I'll just apply this to everything. Fear to me, ultimately, is like an internal alarm system within yourself, letting you know that you are feeding negative belief patterns. That's what fear is to me. I don't think that it's scary. I don't think that it should be hated. I think that it should be respected and appreciated, and you should use it as a tool in life to better yourself. Because when you have a fear pop up about something, especially an illogical fear, you're not scared of that thing. That's where I'm talking about definitions. Like you're scared of what's behind that thing. So if you're scared of spiders, right? I have a fear of spiders. Are you scared of the spider, or are you scared that the spider is going to bite you? And then that spider bite is going to turn into, like, you know, you're going to get a brown recluse bite, and it's going to turn into like flesh eating necrosis on your hand or something. And then you're going to have to go on antibiotics, and then you're going to ultimately die. You're not scared of the spider. You are projecting or manifesting, whatever word you want to use, a future series of events, worst case scenario, right? You're projecting that into your reality, into your mind, and then your body is having a biological response to danger that does not exist. That's ultimately what fear is you are tricking your body into a state of thinking that it is in danger with your thoughts. And that's why I'm saying it is negative beliefs that you are reinforcing. That ultimately is what I would define fear as. You cannot test fear, right? You can't go to a hospital. You can't go to a specialist and have them take your fear reading. You can't see it. You can't feel it. You can't touch it. You can't taste it. It does not exist. It is a construct within our own mind. And that is why fear is subjective, right? You have one person who is terrified of heights and the other person loves jumping, going bungee jumping. It's completely subjective. So I will start there and say that fear does not exist. And then we'll go into like, I have a long list of notes here. So whatever nice. Whatever you guys want to add to that.
Love, love, love it. It's just mind-blowingly accurate so far.
Yeah, it reminds me a lot of anger in the way that we shouldn't demonize anger, right? A lot of people that have issues with anger, the first thing they do is when they're starting to work on it, they get mad when they get angry. Like, they get angry and then they get mad that they got angry, and it's just like a cycle. But I feel like it's just an indicator, just like anything else. And there's reasons why the anger's going off. Sometimes it's a righteous thing because somebody's like, you know, running your foot over with it or whatever. They're doing something that elicits your anger in a right way. And then other times you're just getting mad at someone's opinion or belief or something that you see on TV. And then from that anger, if you want to walk it back, you could look just like you could with fear. You could look back at what caused that. Well, why am I getting mad? I could just turn the TV off. Why does it matter that this country is, you know, being rude or really evil to a certain part of their population? It's something that's happened all throughout time, right? Why am I just getting stuck in it now in this anger? Why am I letting it affect my life? So I think it's the same way. Whereas, like you said, you can't really point and have like an anger meter. You know, people might be able to tell you, oh, this made me more angry than that or whatever, but there's no way to like dissect it and prove it. And I think it's that way with a lot of different emotions. And like you were saying, fear isn't exactly an emotion, but I guess you could say being scared is an emotion, right? So that's really what I wanted to add to that, because that's what it reminded me of.
Okay, so that's kind of a sink, because last night Cody and I were watching some you know, encounter videos, like Sasquatch stories, like, and this one guy, I forgot the name of his channel, but his name is Steve Isdall. He's talking about his first experience seeing a Sasquatch, and he says something about fear and anger being pretty much the same. When you see that thing that, and you have no explanation for it, it's actually anger. Because he said that when he got back to, once he saw it and everything and he processed it, because he literally had to like inch his way back in the dark in the woods after he saw it, or wherever he was, it was like back to his car, which was kind of far away. And so he said when he got back, he was so angry. He was like ready to go back out there and find it and like kill it, you know, because he was so angry. So he equated that to that. Now, I'm not saying that's true, but that's the closest thing he could explain it as. So I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on that.
Yeah. So what I have found, you know, my belief where it currently stands is that all anger is rooted from being hurt or potentially being hurt. So that would make sense. If you're scared of something and then you realize, oh, it's because I'm angry, then you could be angry. That anger could be coming from potentially being hurt. So if you see something out in the woods and you get scared, then you get angry that this thing is going to hurt you. It always ties back to being hurt. And oftentimes it's emotional damage or potential emotional damage that hasn't even happened yet. Just the possibility of being hurt is enough to anger people. I would encourage everybody to trace their anger back, and you usually find that it is rooted in feelings of being hurt.
And definitely that I can relate to that. Because I mean, I guess when I was young and like, just like a kid, you know, grade school age, and I did something that was like maybe wrong or whatever, and my elder sister was like correcting me and stuff, like sometimes I would cry, you know, maybe it was an angry cry, but it wasn't. Yeah, I don't know how to explain it, but
maybe no, it makes sense. Kids do that all the time. They cry, and it's like, even then, the root cause of that is hurt, and oftentimes that hurt comes from expectations. That's a very pertinent thing that I should mention there. So okay. In a child, it's usually expectations of themselves.
Yeah.
So then when they fail and they get, you know, reprimanded or they get corrected, then they feel as though they have hurt themselves. And they also don't understand to the degree that an adult does. So they think mm-hmm. that when a parent is correcting them or an older sibling, that they hurt that other person. So now yeah. they've not only messed up for themselves, but now they feel that they have caused harm to others. And that hurt causes them to get angry and cry and throw a tantrum or whatever. But again, it's always rooted in hurt.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, it makes, sense.
Yeah. So I guess moving forward, let me look at my notes. Yeah. Fear is a warning sign showing you negative belief patterns. And I would say that fear is also a biological response to perceived danger. A biological response to perceived danger is not fear. That first initial reaction that we have when we see something and we register it as dangerous is completely normal. Fear, I would say, is, it could be labeled as that, like that warning sign that danger, you know, is apparent. But I would classify fear as the choice after that initial warning light goes off that something is dangerous. Fear would be choosing to not engage in it, not challenge it, not try to push through it, and becoming basically crippled by it. You know, like courage, there's a quote here by Henry Ford. It says, one of the greatest discoveries a man makes, one of his great surprises, is to find he can do what he was afraid he couldn't do. And I think that fear is really crippling society at this point, because people are too terrified, living in fear, which again, fear is potential danger in the future. Fear cannot exist in the past. That's something that we should really let soak in for a second. You're not scared of anything in the past. You can have traumas from the past, but you don't live in fear of things that already happened. Fear only exists in the future. It's a projection of a dangerous future. So,
and maybe that's why there's this concept of fear of the unknown.
Exactly.
It's not about the known that's already passed.
Exactly. And in children, that's oftentimes the root of their fear. You know, all the parents listening out there, or people with, you know, nieces and nephews, anybody who has children in your life, children's fears, the fear of the unknown, they're doing the same thing. They're projecting a worst case scenario in their mind, but it's so irrational a lot of the times, right? Like, hey, try this new food. You've never had it before. So the child's warning light goes off and says, now I'm scared. I don't want to try that food, because in their head, it might seem irrational to us as adults, because we know, like, it's just broccoli, you know, like it's not going to kill you. But the child has never had it. So that's actually a useful response to a new food. The child is trusting you completely. They've never had it. They don't know if it's going to make them sick. They don't know if it's going to taste gross. They don't know if it's going to kill them. They've never had that experience before. It's a brand new experience for them. So they have that fear response at the beginning because it is a new food, but ultimately that is just the fear of the unknown. They don't know that food, but that is what we should be getting over as we grow older, so that initial fear response is much less frequent in life. And it doesn't, you know, we've had enough years, we've had enough experience to know or we should, that we don't need to live in that fear. We just need to look at something objectively and say, is it actually dangerous or is it just an unknown? And that's what allows us to mature and not live in fear. But I feel like not a lot of people are getting, getting to that stage. And they are, if you look at a lot of adults these days, they do walk around acting as if they are children, just terrified of everything. And that is the fear of the unknown. It always goes back to the fear of the unknown, and we project the worst possible outcome from that unknown. And that's why we live in fear nonstop. So I did, if you guys want to, break down a couple of those quotes, because there's a couple of those that are just unbelievable and they're true. The first one is the Yoda quote. Everybody should know this. If you don't, what are you doing with your life? The first one is, fear is the path to the dark side. Fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering. So that quote is said by Yoda. It is, in context, it is from the Star Wars movies, the original trilogies. And most people just write that off as fantasy, sci-fi, you know. But if you just read those words and you remove the Yoda at the bottom, that's some divine wisdom right there. So fear leads to the dark side. Fear leads to anger. That is true. We just talked about that, right? He was scared because he was angry. He could have been angry because he was scared. Fear does lead to anger. When you are observing a potential dangerous situation, you go into fight or flight. Fight, heightened adrenaline, heightened cortisol, ready to fight. You get angry. Anger leads to hate. That's true. You spend all day, every day being angry at somebody, you're eventually going to hate and resent that person. And then hate ultimately leads to suffering. That's a fact. And this all starts from fear, just like this quote says. Fear. Yeah. So if you apply that to like life here and not in a galaxy far, far away, how many people are in relationships where you have a partner who's scared to talk about something with their husband or their wife?
Oh yeah.
Okay. Why? Because they're projecting the worst possible outcome, a dangerous situation. I'm scared to talk to my partner because they might get angry and yell at me and scream at me. They might leave me. They might judge me, whatever. You're creating the worst case scenario in your head, having a biological response to it. Now your body is in fight or flight. You're in that sympathetic nervous system. And then you just don't talk to your partner, right? So then your partner, who is completely unaware that you have an issue now because you never brought it to their attention and let them respond to it, work through it, whatever needed to be done, they're now just continuing on with their life, unknowing that you have this issue. So now your fear of communication leads you to anger. Now you're angry at your partner because they did not resolve the issue that you did not let them know needed to be resolved. And then 10 years goes by, these patterns can persist. Now you hate your partner, right?
Resentment.
You end up getting a divorce, and now you're 40, 50 years old, single. Now you're suffering. That is the Star Wars quote. And that can be applied to almost every instance of fear taking control and dictating how people act. So that's an unbelievable quote. The other one that I wanted to touch on is the infamous Dune quote, which we read at the beginning. I must not fear. Fear is the mind killer. Fear is the little death that brings total obliteration. This is the important part, though, to me, at least. I will face my fear. I will permit it to pass over me and through me. So that in itself is detaching fear from you. It is its own thing that doesn't really exist, but it's observable. So that is crucial, I think, to dealing with fear in life, is you're not going to be able to turn it off. it's a warning system within your mind, your body, whatever it is, your soul, your spirit, letting you know that you have a negative belief that you need to address. So when you say, when this quote says, I will permit it to pass over me and through me, you're acknowledging it. You know, if you have your check engine light go on in your car, you don't put a piece of tape over it and say, I fixed it. That's not going to fix the problem in your car. You have to address it. You have to acknowledge that the light is on. And then from there, you have to go plug in your OBD2 scanner and scan it and get the error code, find out what's going on in your vehicle. And then from that point, you need to go in and fix whatever needs fixing within the vehicle. And as soon as you do that, the check engine light goes off, right? So I will permit it to pass over me and through me. And when it has gone past, I will turn the inner eye to see its path. Where the fear has gone, there will be nothing. Only I will remain. That part of that quote, to me at least, is acknowledging that fear doesn't exist. I will turn the inner eye to see its path. Where the fear has gone, there will be nothing. There is no residue. There's nothing left from the fear. Fear was completely something that happened within the mind. And once you let that pass through you, there's nothing left. And then you can just continue on with life.
Yeah, I think I love how you brought that up, because in my mind, with the whole, I'll permit it to pass over me and through me, it's like an acceptance. You're not rejecting it. You're accepting that you're in the situation that you're in.
The warning sign.
The warning sign, the feeling. You're like, okay, this is fine. It's just like I was talking about earlier with anger. If you try to repress it or push it down, or even if you get mad at your own anger, but if you just express it and feel it, and like you said, go back to the root, right? What's causing this fear?
Yeah, it's like the check engine light. You just say, oh, okay, there's a problem here. I need to try to find out the root problem here.
Mm-hmm. And then you could just ignore it. And then eventually it could get worse. I mean, a lot of times check engine lights are just, you know, BS because you didn't tighten your gas cap enough. It has a lot to do with emissions. But sometimes, a lot of times there are things that are totally wrong with your car. And it could be worse if you drive it, especially if your check engine light is blinking. So that's like when the fear is at its peak, right? If you're check engine light is ever flashing, pull over your car immediately.
Yeah, and turn it off, because yeah, you're about to pull your catalytic converter. Yeah. No, that's exactly what I'm saying. Like, fear is a check engine light for us, but I would say like a spiritual check engine light.
Oh yeah.
It is letting you know that you have a negative belief, an untrue belief, an unhealthy belief that you need to address. And one of the cool things, I saw a video, I'll try to find it and send it to you guys. It was a clip of Bashar talking about nightmares. I've never heard it put this way. It just blew my mind. Everybody can argue in the comments about Bashar and channeling and reincarnation all you want. I don't care. I'm not saying that I agree or fully support whatever Bashar claims to be. I'm just saying the information that he's presenting is unbelievable. And it's absolutely truth. It's universal truth.
Yeah.
I don't care where it comes from. Truth is truth. And it can come through anybody. So
yeah, he was maybe he's just faking it. Maybe he just knows these things. Like, who cares? His message, right?
He's helping people.
On point. Yeah.
Yeah. So he was talking about nightmares. And again, this goes back to words having power. I love language. I love when you have these revelations of, meaning in life. But he broke it down and he said nightmare. Phonetically, if you look at that word, nightmare, break it apart into two words, you have night and mare. You have the night horse, basically. So he said nightmares will tell you without apology what your deepest fears are. Your subconscious fears. When you have a nightmare, you are being shown what your negative beliefs are, what your deepest fears are, right? So you're being shown your fear, and ultimately that you're being shown what your negative belief that you have convinced yourself is true and should warrant fear. You're being shown what that is. So the nightmare in itself is like the night horse, and you can choose to run away from it, or you can choose to get up and mount that horse and ride it. Basically, you know, charge into battle, get in there, into your subconscious, find out what negative belief system is there, and then conquer it. But you're never going to do that if you don't acknowledge that there's a negative belief there. And I thought that was just pretty profound to break that word down like that. He talked about, he talked about basically a nightmare being a horse. And then he equated it to Pegasus, right? Like you cannot elevate yourself. You cannot fly. You cannot ascend unless you get onto that mare. And I'm doing a terrible job, which is why he's Bashar and I'm not, but yeah, it is true. Like nightmares are again, a check engine. Like how many of us have had nightmares of maybe being alone? That's one that I had when I was a child, just being alone. You go outside, there's nobody anywhere, right? That's a subconscious fear.
Those are what my dreams are like. I'm like, this is amazing. No, I'm just kidding.
It's so quiet. It's so quiet.
Sorry about that. No, and also I want to say, how dare you? You're not doing a terrible job.
The way that he says it is much more eloquent.
Yeah, no, I get it, but you're doing a great job, so I just want to say that.
He's a conglomerate of space beings. I'm just kidding. But I was going to say, if whenever you want to bring up the story of one of the nightmares you had as a child that was a recurring nightmare.
Sure.
And what we kind of discussed in our DMs about it.
Yeah. So when I was a child, I had a recurring nightmare that lasted probably the better part of a decade. It's going to sound very bizarre, but everybody's had nightmares. You know how weird they are. So in this nightmare, it was every time that I had it, it was a lucid dream. Those that are not aware, I'm sure most are that watch the show, but a lucid dream is when you're aware of what's happening. You have some control in that dream world of what is happening, which is interesting because I'm reading The Wheel of Time right now. And there is a dream world in there where you can control things.
Shall I run Riyadh?
Yes, exactly. And so in this dream world, it was lucid and it was enough of a reality that it was my house where I grew up as a child. It wasn't like a mystery place. It was my house. All of my siblings were there. My parents were there. The layout of the house was typically exactly as it was. And at this house, we had a wraparound porch. It was an old house. It was built in the 1700s. We had a wraparound porch, huge French doors, huge windows and stuff. So everything would be completely fine. Everything is normal. I'm playing with my brothers and my sister. And all of a sudden, you would hear a warning siren go off, kind of like a, you know, tsunami siren or like a war siren or something. So it would go off and we knew.
That was your check engine light.
Yeah, we knew instinctually that when we heard this sound, we were to go outside, get down on hands and knees, put our heads down, close our eyes. And that was in honor and submission to what we, this is where it doesn't make sense. What we knew, even though we had never seen them because our eyes were closed, were these malevolent, gigantic, dark, hulking beings who would walk by in front of us. And we didn't see them because our eyes were closed. We didn't dare open our eyes, but we could feel the evil. Like it was palpable right there. And we would wait until they would pass. We knew when they passed. We could feel it within us when they had passed. And then we were allowed to get back up. So I had this dream over and over as a child, and I never understood it. I never saw any significance of it. It was terrifying. I would wake up just sweating, crying hysterically because even though I had never seen these things, they were the scariest, most evil that I had ever experienced, like far beyond anything that I thought was possible. This continues on for many years. And I finally had it one more time. And this was after my parents had divorced and I was a like 12, 13 at the time. So I'm like, you know, into puberty. I'm just angry because I don't have a dad in the house who's there to show me how to be a man. I didn't know that at the time. Now I do. I can look back in hindsight and say that's probably where a lot of my anger was coming from at the time. More hurt than I could handle. The family structure is torn apart. I get thrust into being the man of the house at 12 years old or something. It was just a weird time. So I have this dream one more time. And this time in the dream, my father is not there in the dream, but I have it. And I'm so angry in the dream because of what's happened in my real life here that I was like, I'm done. I'm done submitting to these things. I'm done being scared of them. I'm gonna challenge them. Basically, I'm gonna look up. And so we're all outside, we're on hands and knees. My head is down touching the wraparound porch. Eyes are closed and they're right in front of me. I can feel them right there. And I open my eyes and I look up and there's nothing there. There's nothing there. And the second like that I realized there was nothing there, all of the fear is gone like a light switch. I was not scared of anything. I looked up and there's nothing there. There's just birds chirping and it's a nice day out. And I didn't really understand that dream. That's the last time that I ever had it, which I think is insane because some people will say that's coincidence. I don't believe in coincidence. I think that that was subconsciously something that I was facing for many years in the dream state. And the second that I acknowledged it and I let go of the fear, then it never returned. I won that battle, you know, like in the dream.
You faced your fear.
Yeah. And it's interesting because my fear was nothing.
Exactly.
It showed me that my fear didn't exist. My fear was only happening in my head because when my eyes were closed and my senses were turned off and I was in a place of submission, then I was scared. But the second I opened my eyes, I realized there's nothing there. And that dream has never come back again. That was one of the most terrifying things that plagued me for, you know, 10 years of childhood. So it's very interesting. And then let me scroll back just to remind myself of what we spoke about it, because we talked about this. I shared this with you. And then you brought up, yeah, when I read Dark Things Pass By, I thought of the Black Riders of the Nazgul from Lord of the Rings. And I said, well, goosebumps in my mind. But it is true. I said, the Black Riders are shadows of their former selves, once great men, who are consumed by greed, lust, power, ultimately consumed by sin. Sins are ultimately at their core a result of running from yourself or God, trying to pad life with comfort instead of doing the inner work, instead of acknowledging your fears, changing those negative belief patterns, you know, into positive ones that serve you. The Black Riders could be a representation of generational or epigenetic fear or curses. They're long gone, but they remain and they influence the world and how people act. So I thought that was pretty profound.
Like the ring wraiths.
And to bring it even further, what do? They try to stop Frodo exclusively. If you think of Frodo destroying the ring, that's his dharma, right? They try to wave him off the path. And if you think of these as epigenetic or things that are passed down, even little voices in our head that tells, you know, you ain't worth anything. You can't do that. You know, you want to be a comedian or you want to be a plumber. You'll never do that. You'll screw this all up or whatever you want to do. All those voices that we have in our heads that I think are passed down from generations of trauma. It's crazy.
Yeah. And it's like those fears are irrational.
Mm.
If you really think about it, every fear is irrational. are you actually scared of becoming a plumber? Like, are you scared of holding a wrench in your hand? Are you scared of working with PVC piping? You're not scared of the actual plumbing job. What you're scared of is that you'll fail, right? Yes. And you're not actually scared of that. You're just, again, projecting the possibility of failure into your mind. And with that, what comes with that? Oh, I'll fail as a plumber, so then I won't have money, I won't have safety, I won't have security, I won't have a roof over my head, I won't be able to feed my children, I'll get into debt. You're projecting the worst case thing, which is enough to put anybody into a state of fight or flight to activate that sympathetic nervous system, right? If you're homeless and you have children, you're stressed out, you're in survival mode. So you've just put yourself into that state mentally with your thoughts. Fear does not exist. It really does not exist. We have a warning light, and then we choose what to do when we see that warning light. Fear is a word. It is a word. It's not, it has no control over you. It's a word that we use to describe a very large chain reaction of events that happens mentally and biologically within our bodies.
Andy, you could look at it as, like you were saying earlier a little bit, but more to the point, because this popped in my head, but when you were talking about a danger, so you're walking around, you're in the woods, all of a sudden you see a bear, you see a coyote, there you go, you see a dangerous animal, right? And you have this reaction. So yeah, you could call that fear if you want, but then what we really are talking about is when you're not in any plain danger, anything around you, right? But you're repeating this, you're turning your own check engine light on with your thoughts, like you were saying earlier. And something like that, because of our thought patterns and these negative thought patterns, we could just keep going. Like we talk about spiraling, right? And that's what really spiraling, when someone's like, oh, they're spiraling out of control. I feel like that's what it is. It's just this process that's going and going. And I feel like that's really what anxiety is. You know, I think unchecked fear leads to anxiety. It's basically the same thing. You could say fear is anxiety in the context that we're talking about it in, with this creation of it in your own mind.
I've said that for 15 years now, because I dealt with anxiety, crippling anxiety for many years. And I've always said that depression is when you're looking at the past or living in the past, and anxiety is when you're trying to control the future. Which you can't, because the future doesn't exist. The future is not here right now. All we have is right now. The future, how are you going to control it? You don't know what possible infinite number of outcomes, but you're trying to control it and get the one that you want. And again, why is that? Because you're scared. You're in fear of the ones that you don't want. So all these things, fear, anxiety, worry, they're all symptoms of negative patterns of belief. And the good news is that you can change those. You know, like when you understand that fear doesn't exist, it's just something that is happening. It's just a way to describe a process that's happening in your head and in your body. Then you can change that, because a lot of our fears are dictated, led, sparked, reinforced by biological processes. You have two states of being that your nervous system can be in. You can be in the sympathetic nervous system, which is your fight or flight. You know, they've added some on, or freeze or fawn or whatever. And then your parasympathetic nervous system is your rest and digest. You know, that's when you heal. It's when you digest your food. It's when you are able to relax. It's when your heart rate drops, your blood pressure drops, everything. That's a state that we ultimately want to be in at all times. But that sympathetic response is invaluable. That is when we see the coyote bear in the woods. and we have that dump of adrenaline, right? That's a survival thing. And it should remain a survival thing because you're presented with danger. You either need to be able to run faster than the thing that's trying to eat you, or you need to be able to fight back and kill whatever is trying to eat you. It's purely survival. Okay. But people are now having that reaction to a negative comment on Instagram or Facebook. And it's no wonder people are scared of everything now. You know, like, they're living in this state of perceived fear because their bodies biologically are stuck in that fight or flight. That sympathetic nervous system has been activated and it won't shut off. That's the adrenal fatigue that everybody deals with. That's the burnout. That's all of it. So when you really understand that fear is in great part nothing more than a biological response that you are perceiving based on the thoughts that you are putting into your head, your body is reacting to those thoughts. That's why you can knock yourself right out of a panic attack, an anxiety attack. I've learned to do that. You do deep breathing techniques and you have these, you can say them out loud. You can replay them in your head. You can have like a mantra that you say, just words of affirmation, words that calm you down, and do these deep breathing techniques. You can knock yourself right out of a panic attack in a minute if you want to. Right. So obviously the fear doesn't exist. This is a process that's happening. You're projecting the worst case scenario, and then your body's going, shit, well, now we have to fight or run or do something because we're in so much danger. But you're not in danger. You're tricking your body to believe that you are in danger. It's a weird thing, but you can fix that. It's fixable. You know, you have to learn how to calm your nervous system like that. And the way that you calm your nervous system, there are things that you can do physically, you know, like you get some exercise, sweat, get your heart pumping, sit in a quiet room, sit on the ground with your legs up on a wall, going up the wall, you know, take pressure off your lower back. These are all very helpful tools, but ultimately it starts in your head. It starts with those negative beliefs, and those negative beliefs were born from, drumroll, childhood trauma usually. So you really have to go back and do that work and say, why am I scared of this? Mm-hmm. It's probably because you had a negative experience in the past when you were very young and impressionable and naive and you didn't understand the world. But now you need to go back and you need to readdress that now that you have 20, 30, 40 years of life experience, and you are able to rationalize things and you are able to look at things from a place of logic and not purely childhood emotion. You need to go back and revisit that thing that hurt you, because you'll see it from a completely different perspective now. And once you do, you'll be able to let it go. And then when you let it go, that fear is like a fart in the wind. It's gone.
Yeah, it reminds me really of any compulsive behavior. Sure.
I was going to say that. I was going to bring about...
It's like addiction, right? Go ahead. What were you going to say?
No, you go.
Well, I was going to say, it really just reminds me of what... this concept of evacuating your cockpit, right? So it's like when you can't handle what's going on, something takes over.
Autopilot
engages, and you just go pick up that, you know, that bottle of booze or whatever it is, or food. You know, I mean, I'm not saying I'm perfect. I might not have had an issue with alcohol in my life, but I definitely had an issue with food, or, you know, with sex and women and stuff like that. So I would just automatically do it. It just felt right. Now fear, it's like the same thing, right? When you have this anxiety about something, you can't stop yourself from thinking about it. And what you said, Nick, is great. I'm glad you brought up solutions, because I definitely did want to talk about that. And one of the solutions that I found was meditation. And the reason that it helped me was because it wasn't any of this magic mumbo jumbo. It's just, I was able to be aware in a situation when that happened, when this autopilot, wherever it was, I was able to observe, stand back and observe my own behavior, and kind of just stop it, right? It's like a mental exercise. Like, you know, you go to the gym and you pump iron. Well, for me, meditation at that time was like that for my mind. And I was able to be like, oh, these fears are irrational. What am I getting nervous about? You know, like, I would get nervous before I went to DJ a wedding. Like, what if something goes wrong? And now I'm like, well, something goes wrong, we'll just have to recover. You know, like, it, I guess it was just meant to be. If I'm prepared correctly, then why should I sit here and worry about it? Right.
Totally. And if you look at a fear like that, like you just said, like, I'm scared to go DJ this wedding. Are you, though? Like, ask yourself that question.
Yeah, right.
Really take a minute and just turn off your brain for a second and look at it and say, am I really scared or am I excited, really looking forward to this? I want to go have fun. I want to do the best job that I can. I want to see people smiling and dancing and having fun. And at the same time, I'm having this biological response. I can feel it myself tensing up. I can feel all of these things happening, right? So you're having multiple things taking place at the same time. But fear is when you choose to focus on the worst case one. So that's the point that I'm making. Like, fear is when you go, nope, I'm terrified. And instead you don't go, no, I'm excited, but I'm having this biological response in my body. I know that it will pass, right? A panic attack lasts 15, 20, sometimes 30 minutes, and then it's done. That cortisol is burned off, that adrenaline is gone, and then you're just doing your thing again. So yeah, that's a huge thing, is to ask yourself, are you really scared of something? You know, like, there's people.
What's the worst that can happen?
Yeah, those irrational fears, you know? And I know this, I'm speaking from experience. I had a horrific car accident that left me literally like crippled and almost killed me. It was terrifying in the moment. And afterwards, I was what I thought scared to drive for years afterwards. But then you go, no, I'm not scared to drive. The car doesn't scare me. I love driving. I go on long drives. That was one of my wife and I's things that we used to do when we were super young, is we'd just hop in the car and go driving through Oregon. No idea where we were going. We would just let the road take us and end up where we ended up and have a full day of just talking and listening to music and stuff. I love driving. I love vehicles. I love the mechanical engineered part of it. Like, I wrench on cars. I have since I was a kid. Nothing about cars or driving scares me. And I realized I'm scared of dying. You know, like, I'm not scared of getting in the car and driving. I'm scared of death. I'm scared of the unknown. I'm scared of leaving my wife behind. So I had to go through that. And I realized that is a negative belief. I'm projecting the worst case scenario. Like, could I die? Yeah, 100%. You know, you could get a drunk driver smash into you. But also, I'm just getting in my car and driving 3 blocks to the gas station. So maybe I shouldn't hype myself up into hyperventilating for 3 blocks of driving down a side street, you know?
Yep. Absolutely.
Now just apply that to whatever your fear is, right? Go ahead, Sharon.
Apply it to everything in life. Yeah.
So throughout all this conversation, I was thinking about people with OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. And I don't know if that's still a thing, because these days I feel like I've been hearing a lot more about ADHD. Not that they, I don't know if they're the same or anything, but anyway, that's all besides the point. Like, I knew of someone years ago who through my ex-boyfriend, he was his friend at work. And he would tell me that he had to wash his hands all the time, like multiple times while he was at the sink, he would put multiple doses of whatever the hand washing, you know, antimicrobial, antibacterial stuff was, you know, on his hands, rinse them, and then do it again. It's like he had to do it like 6 times or something. You know, he had to do it multiple times because that was going to do it. You know, why not once? Why not 7? Why not, you know, why not 3? But whatever, it was like obsessive, and his hands were getting like red and raw, and he would still do it. And my ex-boyfriend would ask him, like, what are you thinking about when, like, don't you know that it's okay? Like, you don't have to wash your hands that much. And you know, and he'd be like, yeah, I know it, but I just can't help it. And it just, it's mind-boggling to those of us who don't have that particular fear or that particular OCD behavior. But, you know, we can think of other things that maybe we have done that are like that, right? Or just things that are, you know, maybe similar in nature. And mm-hmm. I can maybe think of something for myself, because growing up, I was a nail biter.
But no, I was just going to say that.
Well, jinx. And you can tell us your story in a second, but I was going to say, I was a nail biter and I didn't know why. You know, people would be like, oh, it's your, you know, you're just anxious, or it's just your nervous response. You're just nervous. And I'm just like, but I'm not nervous. Like, that's not what it is. But I just, you know, it was a thing and I did it. You know, I did it. Well, one day I'm in college, and this is funny, but I remember, because that's the day it stopped. You know, I was sitting in a lecture and I'm not paying attention to what the lecture was about. And I'm looking at my fingers because I want to bite my nails. And I know that I'm like 20 or something. And I'm just like, I'm getting old for biting my nails. Like, this is ridiculous. But I wasn't I wasn't super judgmental of myself. I was just kind of like, okay, let's get to the root problem here. You know, mind you, the lecture's going on and I'm not paying attention. I'm in my own head. And I'm like, what is it that makes me want to bite my nail? Like, what is the root? And I realized, I was like, I don't like seeing the white part. So when I see white part, I just want to take it off, take off the white part, take off the white bit. For whatever reason, that was just a thing. Like, maybe I thought it was, like, unconsciously or subconsciously thought it was dirty or what. I don't know. I just needed to get the white part off. So I was like, what if I get a set of nail clippers that I can carry with me all the time? And if I feel like I need a bite, I get the nail clipper and I just trim off the little white bit and that's it. Well, that was the last day I bit my freaking nails, because I identified the root problem. And ever since then, like, I just, if I see my nails getting a little bit too much, I just trim them down. And I was never one to like bite till they were like beyond the, I don't know how you've seen people that bite like all the way down here. I was never one to do that. I just took off the little white bit. So now, you know, I've been free from that for many years now. And, it's just interesting how I did it through my mind. You know, I did it by thinking about the root problem and identifying that and addressing that. I don't know if it was tied to a childhood trauma or anything like that, but I didn't really have to if I just addressed what it was that was causing me to do that weird behavior, which was not like a normal, natural type of behavior.
Yeah, that's a good point, because so many people might shy away from inner work because they feel like they have to relive things from their past. But I think what you said is great, because sometimes you don't even have to know what it was that caused it. You might not even remember. You'll never remember. I also used to bite my nails, and I also used to like pick at the side of my
skin
or whatever.
Ouch.
And just like roll it up and it would get like bloody and stuff. And then I was able to successfully stop biting my nails for a while. I would just file them down. It would like give me something else to do. But I realized I was just replacing one behavior with another, because I always had like a little file on me and I was always like filing them down. And then I don't even know what it was. Just one day I kind of stopped doing it. It's really strange. Sometimes once in a while I have a nail. Sometimes they get a little long because I don't cut them right away. Like I look like I'm a cokehead or whatever, but you know, so I don't bite. So, but sometimes I'll have one. I'll just like once in a while I'll nibble on it, you know, and then I know I'm like, all right. What am I doing? You know? But I think it was just a reaction. Whenever I felt uncomfortable or something was going on, it's like a familiar reaction. And when I was younger, you know, people suck their thumbs. I used to suck my two middle fingers all the time when I was younger. There's like pictures of me doing it and stuff. So I feel like Yeah. I just like, you know, and I think that's the same thing. It's like a feeling of comfort. It's a familiar feeling that you have when something uncomfortable is going on that you don't want to face.
Dude, 100%. I was just going to say that because I was a horrible nail biter my
Me
entire life as well.
too.
And I tried to justify it sometimes being like, oh, I play guitar. I don't want long fingernails. It makes it harder to press the strings. No, those were all coping things. And
Yeah.
I was like a bad nail biter. I would get pretty bad anxiety if I bit my nails down and I didn't have any more to bite off. And then I realized like it's only when I'm anxious that I'm biting my nails. It's only when I'm anxious and I don't have any nails to bite left that it makes me more anxious. It was this weird thing. But yeah, ultimately I realized like I've been biting my nails since I was a child. So what made me start biting my nails? Obviously something in childhood. I don't remember what it was, but just knowing that I started when I was a child allowed me to stop. And now I'm like Brandon, where I mean, it was like almost overnight for me too. One day I was just like, I'm biting my nails because something happened in childhood and it made me so nervous that I started biting my nails. But I'm not in that place anymore. And I'm much calmer now. And I have like, everybody's a wreck in this
Nail
life, but I
clippers.
have like a little bit more control over my life and my
I can
emotions at
do
this point.
it.
So like I just stopped and now I'm like Brandon, where I'll go to play guitar and like I can't press the strings and I'm like, shit, I haven't clipped my nails in a couple weeks or way too long.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's like proof in itself that when you go back and you, I won't say heal past trauma because it's like, how do you go? You can't go back and reverse damage done to you, right? But at least acknowledging that it
Yeah.
happened is,
It's a seeing. You
it's
have to
enough.
see it.
Yeah, it's enough to change your current behaviors. Like, if you don't understand why you have a behavior, you're not going to be able to change that behavior because there's no reason to change it, because there's no reason that it started in the first place, right? You just say, this is who I am. It's who I've always been. I don't need to change it. This is how God made me. Whatever coping mechanism you want to use, you will implement it. But once you go, oh, okay, this is actually happening because 30 years ago this happened, and this is not my natural state of being. This in itself is a coping mechanism. Then you can unravel that. And oftentimes that's what's going on with fear as well. Things that we are scared of are actually childhood traumas. It's a biological response to something that happened to us as a child that is familiar enough in a current circumstance that it's triggering something inside of us. So then we go down that worst case path again. Because maybe it was bad when we were a kid, you know? Sometimes it can be like that. It was just, and a lot of that is just perception too. As a kid, we might think that, you know, a parent has a bad day at work. They come home, we're screaming, we're fighting with siblings, whatever. The parent blows their lid, right? You got a dad that just bellers at you. He screams because he can't take it anymore. As a child, you go, oh shit, my dad's going to kill me now. Because you're a child, you don't understand that your dad had the worst day at work. He's stressed out. He doesn't have money for rent. He can hardly buy food, whatever it may be. You don't understand any of that. You just go, oh, my dad's angry. I've never seen him like this. He's going to kill me. So you go into that fight or flight. You go into that sympathetic fear response. And then you get older and you're 30 years older and somebody yells at you. You go right back into it. So now you go, I'm scared of, whatever. I'm scared of this person. No, you're not. You're scared of being yelled at. And why are you scared of being yelled at? Because you thought your dad was going to kill you when you were a kid. You prescribed the worst case scenario onto your father when he was just angry and had a moment of frustration. You know, you got to dig deep into these things. And then once you do, the fears start to make sense. And once they make sense, you can not only let them go. I think a very important part of this too is thanking them. And not judging and not holding hate in your heart for fear,
Yeah.
because it serves its purpose. It keeps you alive. You know,
yeah, like I was saying earlier, I think it needs to be acknowledged. It needs to be seen. The pain is just asking to be seen and addressed.
Respected and appreciated.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, like we're scared of being scared. Why? The fear is trying to heal you. The fear is literally trying to heal you. The fear is trying to show you what you need to do in order to be who you want to be. So like thank that fear and respect it and use it, utilize it, you know? Yeah. Yeah. I have a couple more points here. I don't know how long we've been going.
About an hour and 15, maybe?
Yeah, about an hour and 15, yep.
Okay. Yeah, I have a couple more that I had written here. First one is, this is kind of just what we've been saying this whole time. Fear is only as deep as the mind allows it to be. Everything that we've talked about, that kind of makes sense, you know? Fear can either be that initial reaction to potential danger, or it can be crippling, you know, shows that you see on TV where people are scared to leave their home or they can't, you know. Actually, Sharon, one of the things that you were talking about, OCD, it's interesting because if you look at what OCD actually is, it's obsessive compulsive disorder. That comes from thoughts, though. So you have compulsive thoughts where they enter your mind seemingly from nowhere. And then the other side of that is once you have that compulsive thought, you obsess over it. You can't let it go. Mm-hmm. That is fear. Mm-hmm. If you look at that definition and then you think about fear, it's the same exact thing. You have an obsessive thought, right? So I actually had this most recently. The way that it kind of manifested in my life mostly was the first time I had a child. My oldest daughter was born almost 5 years ago. I had all these compulsive thoughts that led to a lot of fear for the first probably year of her life. And it was just the weirdest stuff. Like I would be scared of her getting injured, right? And that is good. As a parent, you should like protect your child and not let them get injured. But it was so irrational, some of the things that I was thinking. We have reclining couches. So I would, recline back and then I'd go to sit forward and I'd have like a panic attack thinking like, oh my God, I didn't check if my baby was underneath there or if she had her finger up on one of the recliner arms because they're mechanisms that go like this. And I don't want to, you know, her fingers are so tiny. I don't want to cut like lop one of her fingers off or something. But then I couldn't stop thinking about that. And it would be like, we'd be out somewhere at the grocery store. And I would realize that I'm sitting here kind of stewing over like how she could potentially get hurt and how terrified I was of that. And that could be labeled as obsessive compulsive disorder because I was having compulsive thoughts that I don't know where they were coming from. And then I was obsessing over them. Ultimately, that led to me understanding that fear was coming from me projecting failing as a father, right? I don't want to fail anyway as a father. And then where's that coming from? Childhood trauma. As always, my dad was great in many ways and severely traumatizing in many other ways. And that's not me holding any anger. Everybody is a wreck, no matter what they project in the world or the persona that they try to put out there. Everybody has their own stuff, you know? So ultimately it was me feeling like I was going to fail, being scared of failing. And then as soon as I acknowledge that, I don't have those compulsive thoughts enter my head anymore. I'm not terrified of my children getting hurt like that.
And to add to the irrationality of it, you're afraid to fail, but failing is sometimes one of the best things that you can do. I mean, you know, maybe not with a child and getting their finger cut off, but, you know, any other like comedy or whatever it is you want to go do, you might fail. You're going to try it. You're going to try and you're going to fail, but that's actually what makes you better. So failing is a good thing. Like perfect example. Exactly. And I talk about this a lot in comedy when I bomb or when people ask me about what's it like to bomb, you know, It's like, well, it's a teaching moment. It's just saying to me that what I'm doing is not right. I'm not connecting with this audience. And I can look at it that way. Or I could just shut myself up in my room and get under my covers and say what a failure I am and just, you know, get so upset and just let it ruin me and then not try it anymore. But that's the thing that's so funny. When I talk to people about fears that they have or whatever, I'm like, well, what are you afraid of? Like, walk it out. Like we were saying, right? Like, take it to its logical conclusion. You know, what's the worst that's going to happen? And usually by the end of that, you get to death, right? Oh, well, it's a fear of dying. Maybe not on stage exactly, but yeah, that's what's crazy. Because I know a lot of people that once they did that little exercise about what am I really afraid of, it just kind of melted away for them. They're like, oh yeah, what am I really afraid of here? Like, what's going on?
What you said about kids and being kind of afraid of things happening to them. I had a friend who told me some years ago when she had her baby that, you know, she would take her son to the mall to play with the other kids. And they had these structures that you can climb onto. And, you know, when the mall is full of moms and kids, you know, parents and kids, it's like that thing was full of kids and kids were constantly moving and bumping and each other and falling and climbing to the top. And like, you know, maybe almost looking like they were going to take a tumble, but then they didn't. And you know, things like that. She told me, I saw so many times when a baby looked like he was going to fall, like he was going to hurt himself or he was going to do this. And she's like, I believe in guardian angels because like there were so many times babies just like looked like they were going to fall over and they were just fine. They like, or even if they did topple, they just got right back up and did whatever, you know, they weren't hurt really. So it made me think of that story.
Which is funny because I take my kids to the bookstore all the time. We have a Barnes & Noble here and it's a two-story. So we go up the escalator and then at the top, they obviously have the railing that goes around the top section. You can look down and see. The railing is probably 4 feet tall. My children couldn't climb up and over it, especially years ago when we started taking them. They were just barely starting to walk. I still had an irrational fear at the time
of they would get over it and fall over.
Yeah, they would either get over it or there'd be some crazy, you know, pick a kid up and throw them over, because that actually has happened. Like there was a story about that happening a couple years ago. Someone just picked a little kid up and threw him over the side of a railing, and I was like mortified when I saw that story.
So
I had this irrational fear that would happen. And then I trace that back and I go, what am I actually scared of? Because the reality is I'm at a Barnes & Noble.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need to be worried about a psychopath coming up and throwing my child off of a balcony. This is coming from something much deeper. So then I trace that back and I go, oh, well, I am scared of losing my children, you know, losing my happiness, losing... But then I trace that back further and I go, well, my children are now my purpose. So I'm scared of losing my purpose, you know? Mm. And then I go, okay, well, I was in a position for many years where I felt like I did not have a purpose after that car accident. And I was dealing with like PTSD and my brain not working properly. I wasn't working at the time. I had nothing, you know,
that's
like,
huge.
So that's a huge thing for humans in general, though, is like, most people, like when they retire, if they don't have a purpose, they're dead in 5 years.
Yeah.
We're humans. We need a purpose. We need to be doing something. So I trace that all the way back. And this, I'm just telling the story. I know people will probably say it sounds crazy. It's not. When you have children, these are thoughts that you actually have and you have to deal with. I've talked to everybody that I know that has kids. Like we share the, especially fathers, we share these things. It's our role to be the protector, to constantly be scouting for danger to protect our children. So something like worrying about your kid getting tossed off a second story thing, it is irrational, but at the same time, it's our duty to ensure that that never happens. So we kind of have to have it in the back of our mind in some way. But ultimately that fear is of me losing my children, my happiness, my purpose, failing as a father, all of these things. And then that goes back to childhood. It all goes back to childhood and being hurt, you know, being shown that that is even a possibility is damaging. You know, it sticks with us when you, like, especially parents who get divorced. That's what was so crippling to me when I was a child, is I didn't even know that that was a possibility. In my head, I was just like, no, a man and a woman fall in love and they have kids and they spend their life together and they're soulmates. And then when you realize that that can and oftentimes does get torn apart, it's kind of earth shattering, and you carry that through life, being like, you know, worst case can happen. So trace things back. If you guys don't have anything to add, I have one more big point that I wanted to make.
I want to say something really quickly, because what we're saying about these irrational fears, sometimes they're not even irrational fears. Like fear of your kid getting thrown over the balcony might not actually be that irrational if we've seen it happen before and all that stuff, but it's how much credence do you lend to it? How much do you obsess and worry over it? Right. So you still might
energy
have
to do you give to it?
Exactly. You don't have to get the energy. You just give it the balance, right? You're just like, all right, well, yeah, that's a possibility. But maybe the kid that got thrown off a balcony, maybe he was a dick. You know what I mean? Maybe he deserved it. Just kidding.
Oh my God.
You never know. I mean,
because you should acknowledge the possibility that that could happen and be prepared to stop it.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
But the fear, where it becomes a fear, is now you're stewing on it. And I've let myself in a Barnes and Noble as a grown ass man slip into fight or flight adrenaline response at the thought of my child being thrown off a balcony when it's 11:30 on a Tuesday and there's 10 people in the store and it's a couple old women and their grandkids, you know, like that's where that split happens, where reality is taking place. But in your head, you're now in a danger zone. It's weird. So the last point. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say I had another thought of something that could lead to fear, or something that I suppose is caused by fear, I should say. And that is procrastination. Because, and I'm just speaking from experience, because most recently I had to call my mortgage company, and I just had this irrational fear about it, and I had been putting it off for a very long time. And I had a question about something, but I didn't realize I had the question until, well, it's a long story, but it doesn't matter. It's just I didn't want to call them, and so I put it off. But I was like noticing that fear. And so for some days before I finally did call them, I was like, this is irrational. Nothing's going to happen. Nothing's wrong. Everything's okay. I'm going to be okay. I'm going to call them and we're going to have a good discussion and we're going to resolve the problem and everything's going to be okay. And so I had to put that, I feel like I had to put that energy out there, at least for myself, to create the space for me to just stop procrastinating and call them and finally address the issue. And I did. And when I got off that phone call, I was like, I just felt so relieved that it was over, you know, because I had been putting it off for so long. So I just wanted to bring that point up. The procrastination can also be fear-based.
Oh, 100%. Because you procrastinate because you're projecting the worst case.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you put it off as if you can run away from it. But that kind of ties into that nightmare thing. You can't run away from these things. You have to. And I've been a huge procrastinator throughout my life as well. And it's always fear-based. It's always, I'm scared that something bad will happen. And then 99% of the time, nothing happens. Right. Mm-hmm. And then you learn, like, shouldn't do that anymore. Were you going to say something, Brandon?
Nope.
Did you cut in? Sorry. Okay.
I'm good, yeah.
The last point that I want to make, because we've been talking a lot about fear and what the mind does and how the mind tricks the body into having this biochemical reaction where it releases adrenaline and cortisol and you know, different chemicals and hormones. What is our mind ultimately? That's something that you really need to ask that question of. Our mind is not us. That should be made very clear. Everybody really needs to understand that. Our mind is not our soul, our spirit, what we really are. The way that I like to think about it is the mind is essentially like the operating system, telling the body what to do, which means that the mind can be programmed, and we know that. There are mind-altering, you know, like MK Ultra style things where you can program the mind. It's easy. This is not up for debate. And when you're in a narcissistic relationship with somebody, your mind gets programmed. You go through mind control.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can control other people's minds, which means that you can control your own mind as well. And this processing system that we have, this operating system, it processes what we're putting into it, and then it basically spits us out a suggestion. That's how the mind works. So the mind says, you know, I'm in the woods. This is what I'm seeing. There's a river over here. There's a fallen tree over here. Oh shit, there's a coyote bear over there, as Brandon said. And it takes in all of these factors, and then it spits you out a suggestion. And it's saying, that's potentially dangerous over there, that animal. So what you need to do is run this way, because the mind has computed that that way is going to be more difficult to run. So you need to run this way instead. It gives you a series of instructions. You're not obligated to follow those instructions. It's very important to understand. You're not obligated to do those things. It is operating from a place of survival, but oftentimes that survival instinct is flawed. And that is obviously truth, because people think that they're going to die like I did if they get into a car. That operating system is very touchy, and it has bugs. It has, you know, mind viruses. That's why they call it that. It's in a constant state of change, or it should be, based on all of the stimuli that we're taking in: sight, sound, smell, life experience, everything. So really remember that you are not your mind. When you're in that weird place, like we talked about earlier, where you're going to DJ a wedding and you're excited, but you're also scared, really separate those two things. Where's the fear coming from, and where's the excitement coming from? The you that is actually you, that spirit inside of you, is excited. That spirit wants to take place in a celebratory event with music and dancing and laughter and community and joy. The mind and the body are feeling the fear. So when you are wanting to retrain this system that we have, this biological meat suit that we have, to not live in fear, you really need to prioritize the part of you that you know is actually you, and really kind of detach yourself from the idea that you are your mind. Your mind is it's a computer. It's a like a biological computer spitting you out suggestions, but those suggestions are influenced by the things that you allow to pass through it. You know, like it's a program. If you have a computer and the computer says, well, every time that I see a one on the computer screen, I'm going to completely shut the computer off. You wouldn't put up with that computer. Like you'd go like Office Space, beat the shit out of it in a field, and you'd go to Best Buy and get a new laptop because you need something.
But is that rational? I'm just kidding.
Yes.
You need a laptop that works in order to get your work done, in order to communicate with other people through an email. How are you going to send an email if everybody has a one in their name, and every time you type in their email address, your laptop shuts down? That's exactly what's happening with fear. We have these weird things that happen in our mind where it shuts us down to potential. It shuts us down from seeing beauty. It shuts us down from connecting with people, shuts us down from opportunities. It shuts us down from spiritual growth, from physical healing, emotional healing. It shuts us down from getting in touch with our inner child. All of these weird viruses that are happening within our operating system are stopping us from being who we are. And just like with a computer, there's antivirus software. You know, like you can have something like an antivirus software, right? That says, hey, there's a red flag right here. Don't let that in. That is essentially what fear is doing for you. Saying, hey, there's a red flag. There's a negative belief right there. Don't let that grow. Don't feed it. Acknowledge it. And then, you know, maybe try to chop down the roots of that, but don't let it overcome.
Exactly.
Amazing. And then the other half of all this, or the other part of it, is that these unchecked, I guess, feelings, you could call them, or responses that we have, like fear and anger and hate, they can also, or they've allegedly also have been shown to cause illnesses like cancer and all these other things in the body. So,
because those are the warning signs that you didn't first listen to the original warning signs, the little check engine light. And so now, you know, other things are popping up because of that thing, other things that are, that were related are now affected. And they're worse.
It's kind of like your body, because you're basically, you're telling your body that you want to die or that you're not comfortable here. So your mind is causing your body to actually fulfill that for you. It's like, all right, you want to handle this. You're done. You can't handle this anymore. Here we go.
So the same exact thing with the car. Oh, sorry. Same thing with the car. As Brandon said earlier, sometimes it can be something stupid just for, you know, emissions or whatever. But sometimes those little things, if not addressed, it's the same exact thing. It's an operating system. It's a car. It's a human body. It's a warning sign. It's a warning sign. If you don't fix something small, it can turn into something monstrous later. If you don't change your spark plugs in your vehicle and you're not getting a strong spark to ignite the fuel in your vehicle, and you let them go for 10, 15 years, and they're these tiny, weak sparks, and inside there, the spark plug itself, all the metal is corroded and there's no spark hardly jumping between the posts. You might think, okay, I just have a weak spark in my car, but that's fine because the rest of it is operating fine. The rest of it is not operating fine. Now you don't have enough combustion within each cylinder. So now you're getting your air to fuel ratio is off. And now all of these other parts that regulate the airflow or test for it or monitor it, they're going to go bad. And you get this catastrophic system-wide failure because you did not address something small. And that's exactly what happens in our biological vehicles that we are currently operating. If you don't address those nagging little fears, 100%, 20 years later, you could be dealing with some cancer or something. And Eastern medicine knows this. That's why, you know, emotions that we feel are correlated to different organs within our body, and there's meridian lines, energetic pathways throughout the system. So, yeah, what you said is spot on. It's like everything's fractal, man. Everything's fractal. I say this all the time. It's like a lot of the stuff that we create in this realm is just a different expression of what we actually are. I know it might seem like a jump to go from a human body to a vehicle, but it's like moving parts, warning lights, it's all the exact same thing. So you have to apply the same logic and the same maintenance to it.
Indeed. Love any it. Other thoughts, Brandon?
No, I think we did nailed a good it. Job of all this. It was very thorough, and it really adds. The only thing I could say is to our lovely viewers is go back and watch some of the other episodes that Nick was on, because this is kind of just like a continuation of what we've been talking about, and I feel like we're just whittling it down.
Yeah.
Also, just a just a quick caveat. Nobody out there beat yourself up if you live with fear. Make that in big bold letters. Fear is a natural thing. It's you can't change it if you don't know that it's happening. But hopefully this episode will allow people to kind of reflect on their own life and say, where could I really dig deep in my own life and apply some of this stuff and start digging, trying to find the root of the problem.
Yeah, we only learn it by doing it.
I'm speaking from personal experience. I lived for 30 years in crippling fear. I'm just now, the past few years, starting to kind of figure it out and, you know, dig myself out of it, having these revelatory things come to me and having veils lifted. So, yeah, nobody beat yourself up. Nobody's perfect. Everybody is trying to get through this. So,
we're all becoming. Right, Sharon?
Yes, like our last episode.
Yeah, the episode on the Tao yesterday, there was a line that talked about becoming, and we were talking about that because so many people say, oh, I'm healing myself. And then some people say, oh, you're whole just as you are. You shouldn't say you're healing yourself and all these things. But I like the term becoming. You know, I am becoming the person who I want to be, something like that. But yeah, you're right. I mean, you can only start where you find yourself.
Exactly.
And if you're get angry or upset, what's that?
I said you're just exactly where you need to be.
Yeah. And if you get angry or upset at where you are or at your progress or lack of progress, it's only going to cause you to spiral down even further. You have to be easy on yourself. I think when you're doing this work, you have to kind of take a step back and look at how far you've come. And sometimes this stuff takes a while. Like the meditation thing, it doesn't happen overnight. And a lot of people get discouraged. They want like an easy fix. They want a pill. And I feel like that's really what the issue in society is. You know, people get mad at pharmaceutical companies and all this stuff. And it's like, yeah, but there's a want for it, right? Like people are begging for the cure to whatever bothers them.
Right.
They just want a pill or a quick fix or a shot or whatever. And, you know, that's maybe not the answer, but it's like, well, it's really about just yourself, right?
Yeah.
Maybe doing
those things, you know, like you said, do it till you're done, you know, will make them realize this isn't really helping me, and that will wake them up.
Yeah. It's really coming from a place of non-judgment, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. It's hard to not judge, especially we talk about this a lot. We get a little bit of knowledge. We fix ourselves up a little bit, you know, throw a little shine and we go out for a ride and we're like, look at all these people without shiny cars. It's like,
oh, start punching down on people.
Yeah, exactly. And it makes you feel better. But really, that's just perpetuating the cycle. And I guess one last thing I could say, because this is something we touched on probably last year when we recorded about adrenaline addiction. And I think that's.
Yes, when he was talking earlier, I was like, I remember one of the first episodes we did with him, if not the first episode we did with him about the adrenaline addiction. But go on.
It's so true, too, because it is a cycle, because when you, I don't know, give into this fear or whatever it is, or anger, when you get that adrenaline, it makes you feel better. It's like having that puff of a tobacco or that drink or whatever it is. You're like, oh, all right, it's good now. I'm good. And then because it soothes you, you automatically think it's the cure for it. And even if it's a subconscious thing and you don't even realize what's going on. So that's why a lot of people will start fights and stuff like that, or just, you know, whatever it is, they'll pick some kind of conflict to happen because of that adrenaline. And like you were saying earlier,
that's all this fight or flight syndrome, stuff, dude.
It's only supposed to take up a little bit of our existence, right? It's only supposed to be when the shit really hits the fan and you have to react. And another thing I was going to say earlier too, kind of reminds me of carrying a gun or a weapon, if you want to do that. So some people carry a gun or a weapon or whatever, and it becomes their whole identity. And now they're the person with a gun, and then they will, even maybe subconsciously, but not realize, they could get into conflicts because they have a gun. So they're not as afraid, or they're not as, you know, or they're like, I'm going to do this. Where, as I've said this for years, I think if you are going to carry a weapon or a gun, the proper way to do it is to kind of just almost forget that you have it. And I know all the safety people are going to be like, oh, what are you, crazy? Not in a safety sense. You know, you always want to be safe and be aware, but you kind of want to not inject it into the situation that you're in, right? You just have it just in case it's something's in your face, and then all of a sudden it comes down to, you know, you have to use that. But it's the same kind of thing. It's a balance, right? So any of these things we talk about, any of these behaviors in and of themselves are not bad. It's just when they become obsessive or a compulsive behavior, I guess you could say, and the balance is out of whack. That's when you have the issue.
That's such a good way to do it, like to think about it. Just do it responsibly in life. Don't live in fear. I have a shop and I didn't go out and buy like a flathead screwdriver because I was terrified, mortified of needing a flathead screwdriver and not having one. I just bought it as a preparation because I might need it in the future, right? And I don't think about it. It's the same thing if you carry. Like I personally carry. I carry a bang stick most of the time. And it's the same exact thing. It's not because of like fear, but it's just preparation. I put it on, I forget that it's there, and hope to never have to touch it. Yeah. So
I carry my purse. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, you can whack it.
Which I do.
Yeah, and that's another thing too. I don't think, you know, everyone's like, everyone should carry. No one should carry. It's like, no, it's a
personal preference.
Yeah, it's just a personal choice.
And as far as your flathead, did you also buy a bag of 10 millimeter wrenches too?
Just I have quite a few of those as well. Yep. Yeah, 10 mils are funny. You buy one and you get in the car and you've lost it already.
Yeah, and it's the most used size. Yep. For most things, just in case anyone's not aware, that's why we're saying it's a mechanic joke.
It is a mechanic joke. You set it down on the bench and it literally just disappears. It's gone into the ether. You get two uses out of a 10 mil socket and then that's all it is. They're disposable, apparently.
That's funny as heck.
Yeah. Except for when I was in the Marine Corps, though, when I was working on jets, our toolboxes that we had, we had to lock them all the time and we had to do inventory every night. So if we lost a tool, we'd be there all night until we found
it. Your fault.
I don't know how that would never happen. There, once in a while, we'd lose something. We'd have to find it. But like, but in real life, you know, it's like, how many 10 millimeters do we have?
Yeah. Yeah. So ultimately, just fear. Just remember, everybody listening, that fear is, it doesn't exist outside of your own mind. And you can alter how your mind works.
Love it.
100%. All right. Well, I'd like to give a shout out to the chat. Thank you guys so much for hanging out all the way till the end. We cherish you guys, all of our audience. I figured out, because we went through a period where we're trying to figure out what to call our viewers, because some might be listening, some might be viewing. Then we were calling them slaves. That was a little abrupt. So I think audience.
And then oversharonites.
Oversharonites. That's still a good one. But, you know, we don't want to create a cult. So we'll just call them our audience.
So funny.
But not. And the funny thing is, I've been calling them slaves before somebody else that started using the slave word. So it's not like anyway.
Stole it.
All right. So, yeah, shout out to the chat. Thank you guys hanging out so much. Thanks for all your comments. We've been getting some really good positive comments lately. It's really amazing. I appreciate all. The best way to support us really is to comment and to ask us your questions. If there's something you want us to talk about, let us know or expand on. You know, people like us are nerds about this stuff. This is all we think about. So if you want to ask us something, we would be more than thrilled to answer it. Other ways to support us, you can go to morelawsmoreproblems.com, click on the oversharing tab, and there's plenty of ways to support us. Financially also, if you'd like to, but like we said, the best way is to just subscribe, hit thumbs up, hang out when we're here, when we're live or we're doing these premieres, which are usually every Thursday afternoons. And tell some people about us, share us with somebody who think can benefit from this information. And remember, we're not trying to woke rape people. And it's not like you could just send them this and be like, see, this is what you're doing. Because if you think that, think about the fingers that are pointing back at you. Maybe there's something that you have to figure out. And this is something I have to tell myself all the time whenever I want to rage out or point my finger at somebody. I'm like, well, wait a minute. What am I doing here? How am I contributing to my own suffering that's going on right now?
Our audience is very distilled.
Yeah, we have a great audience.
The people who will still listen to us when everyone else thinks we're boring.
Yeah, that's the best part. It's our defense is that most people don't get through the beginning because they're just, well, either they're scared of the tarot, which sometimes happens, or they're just bored. They're like, wait, what's going on here? I can't.
I love that you guys do the tarot at the beginning. I've had that thought before too. I'm like, immediately gets rid of people who probably don't belong here in the first place right now on their path.
It's a good point. And the thing is too, we're not judging anyone like that. You know, if you'd like to know about tarot, or if you don't even, and I get it, you could talk, people can talk smack about the tarot. It's not like I even care. I don't have to defend it. It's like the Bible. If you're a Christian and someone's talking crap about the Bible, you know, if you believe it's the truth, it doesn't need any defense, you know? So,
yeah,
but, it was just a cool way for us to get into symbols and stuff.
Yeah. Practice our recognition of
the only way I guess I could be said to be worshiping the tarot is by the amount of decks that I have. <That's a mouth. laughs>
There's no coincidences though, and at least every time that I've come on, every card that you guys pull is so pertinent to what we're going to talk about even today.
Yeah, that King of Cups pulled, is huge. Or
yeah, in the middle it said there was something about being led by your emotions, and it's like that's what we talked about today.
And the compassion part is so important when we're talking about stuff like this. And really everybody, that's probably the last thing I'll say, is you have to have compassion for yourself. You know, just because you come across this knowledge or whatever it is, and then you still exhibit the behavior, if you get mad at yourself, you're just going to perpetuate that cycle. So don't, you know, fuck up on purpose. Sometimes I'll do that. I'll just be like, you know what? Screw it. We're going to go bang hookers tonight. No, I'm just kidding. Not that extreme, but you know, sometimes you just have to eat that chocolate cake or whatever it is and be like, you know, I'm just going to do it and enjoy it. It's whatever. You only live once. So, but it's when that comes out of balance and you're like, well, you only live once. So you're eating chocolate cake for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. You know, that's when it's another great analogy for all this stuff.
Well, you only live this lifetime once.
Yeah. YOLO, as far as we know, right? Well, we probably live it millions of times. Who knows? But I know what you're saying, though. Or you guys know what I mean. But anyway.
Groundhog Day.
Groundhog's Day. Exactly. That's another movie I have to watch with my woman. She hasn't seen that movie before, so I'm very excited. And did you see the theory that they thought Ned Ryerson was the devil? Ned's the guy in Groundhog's Day, that when he walks out and he steps in a puddle, and then that tall guy comes up to him and was like, hey, what's going on? He's like, Ned Ryerson. Yes. Yeah. They said, because it's not until something he figures out with him until it,
that he goes away.
Yeah. It goes away or whatever. But anyway, I'll have to watch that movie with new eyes. I'm pretty excited about it. All right. Well, what do we say to the good people, Sharon?
That once you start over Sharon,
then you totally stop being a Karen.
That's right.
That's right. And remember, everybody, just because we're really smart, it looks like we know it all. We're not trying to tell you how to live.
But we're just giving you some tips on maybe how to live a little more simply.
Yes, exactly. And again, thank you, Nick, again, so much for coming on and being a constant source of not only great content, but also, support. Making me feel good and support.
Yeah, of course. Thank you guys for letting me come on and ramble. It's and fun to unpack these like-minded people. Yeah,
totally. All right, everybody. Until next week, we'll see you later. Take care. Oh, Happy New Year, by the way, everybody. Because by the time you see this, it'll be the new year. So,
24.
Fourth? Yeah, I think so, right?
Yeah.
Happy birthday. Happy New Year, everybody.
Not happy birthday, Jesus.
Happy birthday, Jesus. All right, guys. We'll see you later.